It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 393 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a special one as I talk with Michael Gordon, the writer of Red Winter, the first issue of which has come out from Scout Comics. It's a fascinating look at Criminal as if it was in Russia. There are compelling characters, interesting storylines, and this four-issue miniseries is already underway, so be sure to get to your local shop and tell them you want Red Winter. If you have trouble getting it there, go to scoutcomics.com and see if you can order it there. Michael also has a Kickstarter going on right now for Transdimensional, and we talk about that, as well as what could be coming in the future from him, all of which I'm looking forward to. A word of warning, Skype was having trouble the night that we talked, so there's some static that you'll hear occasionally during our discussion. I'm really sorry about that. If you turn the volume up, you'll be better able to hear what we're saying. So please be sure to listen to this interview. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to talk with Michael Gordon, one of the creative forces behind Red Winter, which is a terrific comic that's out from Scout Comics. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing, Wayne?
Good. It's good to talk with you. Talk a little bit about this book. It's based in Russia, and of course, I mentioned to you when we were talking via email how this, or messaging, how much this feels like Criminal to me. It feels like Criminal in Russia kind of a feel, which I really liked about it. And I'm a big fan of the book. So when I came across this, I really, really enjoyed it. And you gave me a couple of issues to read, and wow, I'm hooked. I really love it. And now, of course, now it's out. It's available in bookstores. And if you can't get it in bookstores, you can get a hold of scoutcomics.com and it can get it to you. But go ahead and talk about what Red Winter is all about and how it came to be.
No problem. It's funny you should say that it reminds you of Criminal so much. Criminal is one of my favorite comics and has been for ever since it's been around, and I'm loving the current series. In general, I love crime comics, and Brew Baker and Sean Phillips are sort of the best example of them, I think, that certainly we've had in my lifetime. So it was definitely in the back of my mind whenever I was, coming up with Red Winter, that I wanted to do something in that sort of lane. But the first thing that came into my head when I wanted to create Red Winter, I think I was researching Russia, and specifically crime in Russia, for just kind of for fun. Mm-hmm. And then I came across Kapotnia, which is the most crime-ridden district in Moscow. Mm-hmm. And once I started reading about Kapotnia, I thought, ooh, there's definitely a story here. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I started with the setting. I really wanted to set it there. And then I came up, Eli Winter sort of grew out of that setting. I remember thinking, right, if I want to do a story set here, the most crime-ridden district in Moscow, who can I put there that's going to hate being there in their very bones? And that's when I came up with the idea of a disgraced former New York City detective. Mm-hmm. So you put him completely out of his element, put him in Kapotnia, sort of under the thumb of the local crime boss, and you kind of go from there. And it's proven to be certainly the most fun thing I've ever written. Like, even though the story is really, it's quite grim, and there's a lot of terrible people in it, and bad things happen, for whatever reason, it's really fun to write. And especially with Eli Winter having the sort of, he's kind of a classic noir narrator, he's kind of mad at the world and grumpy, and that is, it's just really entertaining to write, and I feel it comes pretty naturally.
Have you written like crime dramas in the past?
Yeah, I've sort of dabbled in writing them quite a bit over the years. I have another pitch that I really want to get going eventually. That is, it's a crime comic meets serial killer sort of vibe. But this one was my first real straight crime noir story, and I've loved writing it. Loved then seeing it become a comic with the creative team we assembled, and then it's amazing just to see it out there on store shelves with the Sky Comics logo on it. I mean, I kind of can't believe it. It's just incredible.
It's just an amazing thing because, you know, I enjoyed the book so much. I love the writing and the pacing and the introduction of the characters. And I thought that the building of the characters was something you did particularly well. You talked about the main character, but, you know, you can't pick up the book without discovering his son. I'm always fascinated by father-son relationships. Was that one of your intentions, was to explore the father-son relationship between Eli and his son?
Yeah, definitely. One of the most interesting things I found when I was creating Eli Winter was that I knew that he was going to be disgraced, and he's this guy who has a very checkered past, and I thought, right, what could he have done in his past, and who could he have wronged? And then out of that pretty naturally came, well, what if he had a son and they're estranged for whatever reason? We go into it as the story goes on. And then once I created Joseph, well, whose name is actually Eli Jr., but as you find out in the comic, he does not want to be called Eli Jr. because he's no fan of his dad, so he wants to get his own identity. He wants to be Joseph Winter. And then their dynamic, I felt it just came, it was almost like, you know, they were real people in my head, just kind of talking, their conversations just flowed. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, Jeff, to explore that relationship. I'm a father myself. I have a daughter. She's five, so the relationship wouldn't be much like what Eli and Joseph have. But it's interesting to come from the perspective of a parent. I sort of then tried to put myself in the mindset of what if I was a parent who had done wrong, who had hurt his son, and wanted to make amends, but kind of didn't know how to go about it. And then it all went from there.
Talk about the thing that's interesting to me too is how he got into Russia. I mean, why he went there. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because, you know, I mean, I see New Yorkers wherever I go. I live in Florida, and I see them in cons. I see them every, you know, I see both like Yankee hats and stuff like that. So I know that they're at least fans of something in New York. What was it that made him go to Russia?
Well, as we find out in the first issue, I didn't want to just do a big exposition dump at any point that tells you this is why Eli Winter is in Russia, and this is what happened. Mm-hmm. You want to tease it out over the course of the four issues. Mm-hmm. But you know right from the first seven or eight pages of this issue that Eli is in Russia working for the local crime boss, Nikolai Dubrovsky, who runs the Rasplatovitsary gang. Now, we sort of, early on, Nikolai and his son Alexei, when they're talking with Eli, they call him Polizia, which is the Russian word for police. So you know, okay, so Eli must have been a cop. And then, over the course of the series, we'll explore, basically, whenever Eli was in New York, and Dubrovsky, the gang, whenever he was operating in New York, they have some sort of history together. And basically, I want to get across the idea that while Eli wouldn't have been working for Dubrovsky there, he was certainly a corrupt cop. He was certainly in Dubrovsky's pocket. Mm-hmm. And now that he's in Russia, basically, Dubrovsky has kind of rescued him. That he owes Dubrovsky, even though he's in this terrible place and he hates it. Without Dubrovsky, he'd probably be in jail somewhere or worse. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting dynamic as well. You've got Eli, he's in this place. It's the only reason that Dubrovsky's the only reason he's alive, pretty much. But he also hates him and hates every second he's there.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Of course, there's all these different facets to the story that intrigue me. I mean, you know, the son is like a weakness
for Eli. You know, it makes him vulnerable because, you know, otherwise he could be whatever he wants and do whatever he wants. But he has a son, and it seems like some of the times people who are his enemies use his son to get to him. And I you know, it's funny how, you know, in these kinds of situations, people try so hard not to have any vulnerabilities that people can, you know, access and use. But he's got a big one. Of course, he's not the only one. There are other sons involved in this and other organizations and stuff. So, like I said, the father-son thing just fascinates me. I'm just completely interested in it. Did you find, like, in your research and stuff, was this a common feeling that they had when these kind of things take place?
You mean between the fathers and sons?
Yeah, the father-son weakness. I mean, having a son or a relative that was a weakness.
Yeah, it's certainly a common thing in crime stories to have an estranged family member, and that is your sort of your main weakness that your enemies can exploit. Mm-hmm. But then, on the other hand, over the course of the story, I want to show that Eli wants to... He wants redemption in some way, even though he mightn't say it, mm-hmm. and he and Joseph might still have a seemingly antagonistic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Eli wants to make amends for what he's done. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't know how. He wants to have a relationship with his son, but he's kind of a dick to him. He doesn't know how to interact with him because his son's very different than him.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I do make it clear, you know, Joseph is clearly some sort of criminal as well.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph's not, he's no angel.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that then brings up the question, well, does Joseph do these things? Is he a criminal because of his father?
Mm-hmm.
Where nature and nurture sort of begin and end. So I want to explore all those sort of things. And it's great that you say that the father-son dynamic and then the other father-son dynamic, which is between Dubrovsky and his son, Alexei.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, too. I really like that you're interested in all that. Basically, with Alexei, you've got this guy who, he knows his father is the lead crime boss in the city, but he thinks he's being weak by the fact that he is employing Eli.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't like that an American cop is effectively part of their operation.
Mm-hmm.
So he's constantly being antagonistic with his dad as well. And, you know, we'll see. Sparks will definitely fly between all four men.
Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating. It's a great character study. And see, weaknesses are what make people human. And so, as such, right away, I felt like I knew these people because of their interrelationships and what was going on. And the fact that the sons... Well, they don't necessarily feel they have to follow in their father's footsteps directly. They might want to make their own paths, and it's a lot of trouble for the fathers because the fathers end up cleaning up their messes all the time, which is kind of fun to see. But it's also interesting to me that Russia is so... It's a similar kind of thing that, like, we have in America with mob bosses and criminal organizations and stuff like that. I mean, did your research say that they were very similar? Because it feels that way. It feels like the things that go on, like, say, in the book Criminal and even other crime shows and stuff like that go on. It just feels like that kind of situation just seems to naturally develop. I mean, what did you think about that when you came across this?
Certainly when I was doing my research about Russian organized crime mm-hmm. versus American organized crime mm-hmm. versus, you know, any country,
mm-hmm.
there's subtle differences maybe in how things operate, but then there's lots of similarities as well. Mm-hmm. And I feel that this scene in issue one where Eli goes to this bar where the rival gang to the Rasputin Rizari,
mm-hmm.
Where their leader Vasily Andropov operates, and these guys are... They're a neo-Nazi outfit. In my research, I find, you know, those sort of gangs exist in Russia as well. And you even have Eli say, there's a caption where he says, you know, racism exists pretty much everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nasty thing about the world, but it is true.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to include that because it is reflective of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And It's definitely one of those books where there's no heroes, there's no good guys. Everyone's just varying degrees of bad. And I find those sort of stories especially very interesting, because you end up gravitating towards someone. So, and I don't, basically what I want is, I want people to kind of like Eli to a certain extent while they're reading it, but then every now and again be reminded, oh, he's not a good person.
It's interesting, because that's different from, like, say, superhero comics, where, you know, Spider-Man's got great responsibility, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's interesting to see more shades of gray involved with that. And it's really well done, I think. You know, you portray all these shades of gray going along. Even the good, quote-unquote, good guys are not necessarily, as you're saying, good guys. And it's really, really good. I mean, is that kind of... See, I'm torn inside, because, you know, I do like my good guys. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to read somebody who's not necessarily so good and see how they struggle with things. And I just, it's really something. You mentioned that these guys came out of your imagination, but was there anybody, like, in your research that you based Eli on, or was it just truly a figment of your imagination?
There wasn't anyone very specific that I based Eli on. But it's kind of like a lot of things, you know, everything you read kind of goes into your brain and kind of messes around and comes out in something else. There are other stories that I've written that have characters that are much more based on specific people or specific things, but Eli's not based on anyone specific, but he does have characteristics of a lot of sort of noir or crime protagonists over the years. That's what I would say. And Red Winter doesn't have heroes or villains. It has protagonists. We have our protagonists, and then there are antagonists. But nobody's all the way good.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I got to talk about the title, Red Winter. Of course, this is in Russia, and it's in the winter. So I guess that's why it's Red Winter. You're associating that to make the call. Is there any other meaning that you had for that, or was that specifically what you had in mind with the title?
My initial title for it was The Endless Red Winter. And I remember telling my wife that title, and she just immediately went, "Don't like that." And I said, "Well, why not?" She goes, it doesn't sound representative of what the story is. So then I think I went, "Well, do you think Red Winter sounds better?" And we all agreed it did. You've got red, which is the association with Russia. Winter, it's set in cold, grim Capotnia. You know, Eli's always wearing his Russian hat. He's always cold. And then also, Eli's surname is Winter. So I thought it all, the title worked pretty well.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. It's very representative of the book. I agree. I think you guys made a wise choice with that.
Thank you.
To do those things. So it's really good. Now, the one thing I don't want to spoil, but I want to talk a little bit about, is Eli's son. He does not... See, this is where I got to phrase it in such a way that it might not spoil it for people. Let's just say that he has rough times in this book. And there's one time when he actually, I think he's in a hospital, if I'm not mistaken, as a result of things. And so it's really interesting to me that Eli he starts to realize that maybe what's going on with the son is a reflection of what's going on with him on some levels. And, you know, I the son is really interesting to me, too, because of the way that he goes about things. It's almost like he wants to be the father, but in a different way, is what I kind of got out of it. I mean, was that what you were after with him?
Wanting to be like his father.
Yeah.
But in a different way. You know what? I hadn't really thought of it like that, but now that you say it, I can see that. That is interesting. Certainly, I wanted to... I mean, if you really think about it, if you take it back to the basics, Eli was a cop. He was a detective. So Eli, at one point, was a good person. And he was on the side of law. But then he became a corrupt cop, and everything went from there. But Joseph... I don't specifically state in the story his entire backstory, but Joseph is a criminal. Joseph, you know, he's not a former policeman or anything like that. So I suppose what I was trying to get across is the fact that Eli's, maybe his lack of a moral compass and the fact that he wasn't really there for his son growing up has contributed in some way to the way Joseph is. And you can kind of see, I try to get across in their personalities, like when they're arguing, they're probably more alike than they want to admit. So maybe that's where you could read into it, like you say, that Joseph wants to be like his father, but different. So I like that interpretation. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's really it's one of those books that I like to read multiple times because there's layers to it that I don't necessarily get in the first time. Mm-hmm. So I want to understand the more and go back and look at these things. And it's really, it's one of those deep books that I really enjoy. I like a story where, you know, I mean, I read all the time. I can read some comics in 5 minutes. You know, I zip through. You know, I don't necessarily read every word of the dialogue, but I can pick up from the artwork a lot of what's going on. But yours, I had to sit there and pay attention.
That's nice to hear. I definitely find writing Red Winter, the most interesting thing to write in it is the characters. You know, you'll notice in the comic, it's not an action comic as such. You know, there's some fights in it, and there's a pretty sort of an action set piece in issue 4, but it's really more about the characters and their interactions. And I've had lots of sort of positive reviews from people about the characters, so it's really gratifying to hear, because that is what I wanted to do.
Oh, it's just great. Now, I do have to delve into the art.
Yes, definitely.
The art is a very important part of this. It fits the mood of the story so well. I mean, I get transported into that world, and I feel cold sometimes when I'm reading the book. The way they're dressed and the way the atmosphere is, it's all very chilly. I feel like I should put on a sweater when I'm reading the book because of that. It's just one of those things. I mean, you know, I loved it. And according to the things, this Francisco Munoz was the person who did the artwork?
That's the name, Francisco Munoz. He's a Mexican artist. And then Roland Calvin is Latvian. He's our colorist. So I remember when I was putting the art team together, Francisco was just, as soon as I saw his stuff, I go, I really want that for Red Winter. And then he even, the style of his sequentials that I'd seen before Red Winter, he altered it slightly for what he was doing Red Winter. And I just feel it's perfect. Like you say, I mean, you can read that book and you just feel cold, you feel dirty. Everything in the book looks grimy. Yeah. You know, you wouldn't ever want to go there.
Right.
And Francisco's, yeah, his art, it's just, I think it's perfect for the story as well, because in his character designs, even though the backgrounds and the art is very realistic, well, sometimes they have a bit exaggerated expressions or something, the characters, and I feel it makes it pop a bit. It gives you reminds you that you're reading a comic, even though it's realistic as well. And then Roland's coloring, just what I told him was just make everything look dirty, you know, make it look like somewhere you wouldn't ever want to be. And I saw a review, it was a YouTube review, and the person was talking about it, and that's what they said, I kind of feel like I need to take a shower after reading this book. And then he said he wasn't sure whether that was a good thing or not, but he was certain that that's what we wanted the effect to be. And I was kind of tickled by that, because I thought, yeah, that is the effect we wanted to be.
Yeah, because the colors, the color palette tends to be subdued colors. Even the reds, when they show up, there's reds occasionally when something urgent is going on or something. The red isn't a bright red. It's kind of a subdued red when it comes in there. It's still clearly red, but it's not like Superman red or something like that.
That was a total Roland's flourish. I remember the first time he sent me the pages, the colors for that page, and it was during a scene where Eli's getting beaten up by gangsters, and he'd just done this panel where it was all white, the characters, and then red in the background, and I just thought, whoa, it really sticks out then. So from that point, he was just sort of experimenting, and I said, yeah, that's it. So from now on, anytime there's those sort of really intense scenes where someone's getting punched or kicked or something really drastic is happening, we'll do that. We'll pull all the color out of the main bit and just put the background in red. And I think it works. Brilliant.
Oh, it's wonderful. I like I said, I literally look at it and I'm transported into it. you know, I can't help but feel cold and kind of, you know, want to, but yet I'm gripped by the storytelling. I'm fascinated how these characters interact, because they live and breathe like human beings to me. And that's one of the things that, you know, I talked a little bit before about the fact that I can relate to these people and the father-son stuff, but the way that they're written, the dialogue, the way that they interact is very real to me. You know, like I'm really seeing something. I mean, how real is it? Do you know, could something like this really take place in Russia?
I would say it's one of those books where you probably say it's a heightened reality. I'm not entirely certain if there ever could be a scenario where a New York City detective was basically rescued and kept alive by a Russian gang boss. But that's kind of the high concept, you know, part of it. But it's certainly everything else, you know, the idea of these two warring gangs in Kapotnia. You've got the son of the one gang leader who wants to, basically thinks his dad's gone soft. You know, you've got the neo-Nazi gang on the other side who are, if possible, even worse people than Dubrovsky's gang. And then you've just got, you know, a character like Eli sort of stuck in the middle. I could certainly see something like that happening in reality. And I like that you spotlight the dialogue as well. I feel like the dialogue in Ripwinter was very, very fun to write.
Well, I always like to say that artwork draws people into a book, but it's the writing and the dialogue and the characterization that keeps them coming back. You begin to care about the characters, and you want to know what's going to happen to them. And that's with me. This Eli guy, I fear for his life in this book. You know, I'm just not convinced when we get to the end of it that he'll be around for a Red Winter 2 or something like that. But it's interesting because, you know, I usually like the upstanding ones and dislike the darker characters, but in this book I'm just gripped by particularly Eli and his son. I want to know what's going to happen with them. I'm just not sure. See, this is a case again. There are many books where we know people are going to survive and they're going to go on to other stories and stuff like that. But since this is your book and these are your characters, it very well may be that this is the only time they'll be alive to be able to go into stories and stuff like that. Because you can do that because it's your book, which is half the fun. I mean, Batman has to come back every month in order to be able to, for somebody to the writer to pick him up if they need to. But your characters, they're yours, and they don't necessarily have to be around.
I definitely, as I was writing the miniseries, especially when I got to issue 4, and I was in a position where, kind of like you, like I like Eli, and I like Joseph. I like writing them, and even the villainous characters, you know, I enjoy writing them too. But I thought, I want to tell this story. It's a 4-issue story. I have to give it a definitive ending, because I want people to be satisfied with it. And if that means, you know, not everyone in this story makes it out, you know, I'm not going to give any spoilers away, then so be it. I wanted to do what felt natural for the situation that I'd set up. I had an idea of where I wanted to end, but let's say that was like 75% set. But as for how we got there sometimes, or who was going to live, who was going to die, I didn't have it all entirely planned.
That's interesting because, you know, the characters, I mean, you could do a Red Winter too. I mean, are you considering that at all, to doing more stories in the Red Winter universe, shall we say? We don't necessarily have to have Eli or his son, really. You could bring in new characters in the setting because you've established the setting. Is that something you're considering? I mean, I'm interested because this setting, I think, is really unique as far as storytelling goes. You don't get to see this kind of stuff, you know, especially in a comic. A very realistic and I want to say down kind of setting, but once you're in it, man, it's compelling. It's gripping the way that you do it. And I'm not going to be convinced that at the end of 4 issues I'm going to be completely satisfied with this universe. I'm probably going to want to see more, so I'm just sort of curious. Are you thinking about that?
Genuinely, to be honest, I hadn't thought about it until we got closer to issue one coming out. Basically, I've just me and Francisco Rollins and Nikki, our letterer, who's amazing. Like, she takes, I sometimes have these scripts that have so many words in them, and she manages to make it all work on the page. You know, we've just been concentrating on getting this series finished. But then, as we got closer to issue one coming out and some reviews started coming out, I started to think, could I do any more? I certainly think, like you say, the setting, there's enough there that you could do another story in that setting, whether or not it has Eli and Joseph or whatnot in it. I would say it all depends as well, yes, on if it does well for Scout. I really hope it does. I'm very excited for it to come out. This is my first series that's going to have a wide release through Diamond worldwide. I mean, that's amazing. I hope it does well, and I'm going to say watch this space. There could certainly be more.
Okay.
If things go my way.
Oh, well, I hope so, because, you know, it's like I said, it draws me in so much that I just want to know more about these people and these characters and the setting, the way you've got it set up, because, you know, how do people survive in there? The question I keep coming, that's the thing I keep asking. How in the world do you get through this stuff? How do you live from day to day in this setting? And I think that's what Eli and his son and the other folks are doing. And it's so different from what I'm used to. I mean, I don't understand this universe. You know, I don't understand what you would have to do to survive in this thing. So for me to see, it's like an education on many levels. I see something that I don't understand or know about, and I'm learning about it. And I like that in a comic. I like when I find out things about stuff, a situation I haven't been to. And, you know, to say that I'd ever get to Russia is way out in the middle of nowhere. But, you know, I get to go there through your book, and I get to see these really fascinating characters and a gripping story as it moves from page to page. I just, wow. I got to ask, are you guys going to collect this hopefully at some point?
Yeah. I would imagine issue 4 should be coming out in October. And then from other Scout series, as I've seen, trades do follow pretty quickly. So I would hope that we'd have a Red Winter trade would be out maybe by December or sort of early next year. And that'll be a big moment too, to have it, you know, to put on all of our shelves. That's going to be great.
See, that's what I have a shelf where I put books that I really like, and I'd love to have this in a collected edition. Heck, I'd like to have this in hardcover.
You're preaching to the choir here. I love hardcovers.
That's the way I am.
It's one of those things. If everything goes my way and this does well and everyone likes it, I would certainly love that. I would certainly love that to happen.
See, I also have to say, too, that I think Scout is one of those companies that takes chances, that goes and does things like Metal Shark Bro. And, of course, I'm partial because I'm the editor of Stabbity Bunny, so I'm partial to that. But I always find when I read the Scout books that they go places I haven't been before or that I didn't expect. And your book is a perfect example of that. I had no idea of the world we were going to get into when I started reading it, but now I'm in there, I'm like, wow.
Scout has been phenomenal with me. Red Winter issue 1 was initially a Kickstarter project back in 2018, and I remember that Kickstarter went really well. I got a really good amount of backers, and I was getting lots of really good buzz, and then Scout came in, and I sort of had some contact with other publishers about Red Winter that were hedging their bets a little bit, or they were saying, we like this, but. And then when the Kickstarter ended for issue 1, Scout came in and just said, we want this. And it was as simple as that. I remember that day, as clear as anything, I went down to my wife and said, Scout Comics wants to publish Red Winter. And she was excited, I was excited, and I hadn't had that before where a publisher had just come in and said, like, in no uncertain terms, we want it. So and they've been great to work with. They're very, very creator friendly. Basically, they've just said, we trust you and your team, your creative vision, so you deliver us the comic, and as long as there's nothing, you know, egregious to it, they'll publish it, and they trust our creative vision. So, I mean, I don't think that happens in many industries.
Mm-mm.
So that's, I can tell you that Red Winter is 100% me and Francisco and Roland. So
that's cool, because you know, I have to be honest with you, I like different kinds of stories. I mean, you could very easily bring in a good guy character who's going to clean up everything and all that stuff, and it would be just standard stuff, but the way you're going is not something that I've read before, and so for me, I just love that. I mean, I you know, variety is my thing, and I want to go places where I haven't been, and I want to see things I haven't seen, and that's what your book does for me a lot. I can't recommend this highly enough. Red Winter is just one of those great books. If you like criminal, you should have Red Winter right next to it, because this is just that kind of a good story, and I loved it. Of course, I haven't seen number 4 yet. That's the one I haven't read, but you know, number 1 is now out, and I say to you, get to your local comic shop. If they don't have it, ask them to order it. If they can't order it, again, like as I said before, scoutcomics.com, you can order it through. So you want to be sure to get it. You know, it's good to start from the beginning. Yeah, if you're a trader or a collector person, maybe that would be the time to do it. But some stories are you don't want to wait. I don't,
I
anyway.
It's really gratifying to hear people say have such effusive praise about your work. You know, I've been living with this story for a couple of years now, so it's super, thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's just amazing to me, because, well, I'll tell a story that I often tell when it comes to writing and stuff. I'm more of an editor or a reviewer than I am a writer. I mean, I can tell when something's good, but me to come up with the ideas is a little hard. I don't necessarily do that. But I was working on a Star Trek fan film with somebody.
Oh, wow.
And we were writing it, and I was terrified of the characters, because they're well-established characters, and you know if you get them wrong, people are going to scream at you. And so I wrote this story. The basic story was about, it was a starship with no aliens on it, which I couldn't figure how they do that in Star Trek. So I came up with an idea. We wrote the story, wrote the script, and it was this weird experience when I got the last panel written. Of the thing, there was this rush I felt, you know. It was no longer in my head. It was down on the page. And I just felt the weirdest thing. And it was just, I don't know if you get that feeling. Some people do, I understand. But to me, it was so weird. It was no longer in my head. It was down on the page.
Yeah.
Which really was an odd experience for me.
It's definitely a trip, sort of the first couple of times you do it. And especially, you know, if you sit down with a blank page, you know, and you kind of, you have an idea in your head of what you want to do, but it's still, there's nothing there. You know, you magic it up out of yourself, effectively. And I remember the first time I finished my first comic script, just reading it back, and I'm sure it was terrible, but just reading it back, thinking like, whoa, I actually, you know, I had an idea, I plotted it out, I wrote it, it's finished. And I think that's really important for writers. Is that was one of the first things I was told when I was first trying to get into comics. Mm-hmm. Even if you do shorter stories, just make sure you finish them.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to get any better if you don't finish things. If
right.
You just have like, I have a great idea, and then you abandon it along the way,
yeah.
And then you have a bunch of those, you're not really learning anything, apart from maybe how to write good openings,
mm-hmm.
But you're not going to go any further than that.
Okay, some people at Marvel are going to get mad at me, but that, I encounter that all the time when I'm reading Marvel events. It starts out with great promise, and it's fantastic, and oh, this is going to... And then it blug, blug, blug at the end, and the ending is not really satisfying to me. I mean, I read it, and I'm there, okay, that happened, but it's not like, oh, wow, what a great story kind of stuff. See, with yours, I'm looking forward to seeing how you're going to conclude this, because this is going to be something.
I hope the ending isn't disappointing.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to it, so we'll see how it goes. I mean, it'll be out before too very long,
yeah.
And of course, this is going to be, let's see, the timing of this, 4 will be out in October. Mm-hmm. If the trade could come out before the holidays, that would make this a great gift to give to people.
That's certainly what I'm hoping, and it does, you know, it has winter in the title.
Yeah.
So the marketing kind of seems to write itself, so I certainly hope it's going to be available in December. And I would imagine, because of the way the release schedule has been, it might be the sort of thing maybe could come out, you know, just right before New Year, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it would be great, especially for the holidays, because, you know, you could give this to somebody. If you know somebody is a criminal fan, and you want to give them something that they may not have, this is the thing to give them. I really have to say, because it's just, I mean, like, you know, and it's funny because I'm used to lots of superhero action and stuff like that, which is bright and bold. I guess because it is different, that's what appeals to me so much about it. It is a story that is, you know, it's human. It's the word I keep wanting to say, because of the people and the way that they interact, and the fact that they're not superheroic and they don't necessarily have high ideals. As much as I love that, to see something different is really, really a pleasure to read.
Well, certainly in comics, superheroes are a large portion of the industry, and I read my fair share of superheroes. I'm not really a Marvel guy so much. I read more DC if it's going to be superheroes, but I also read lots of Image and Boom and Dark Horse and Sky titles like that, because I'm like you, I want the different things as well. And it's sometimes when you talk to people who aren't comic fans and you tell them, oh, I'm writing a comic and it's about the Russian criminal underworld, they'll kind of look at you and think, well, what superhero is in that?
Like,
no, it's not a superhero. You know, comics are a medium. They're not just superheroes. And it's nice then if you're able to open some people's eyes to that.
It's storytelling. It's getting to know the characters and feeling about them and worrying about if they're going to survive at all. It's the thing that's...
I've had a lot of feedback about that, and I like that readers seem to connect to Eli on some level, and they're worried about him, despite him being, let's be honest, pretty despicable in many ways. But he's, I think a lot of people just, maybe they can relate to, you know, everyone's made mistakes in their life. You know, Eli's might be more exaggerated than some, but everyone's done that. Everyone wants to make amends, at, you know, for certain things they've done. So, and also, Eli, he's just kind of tells things like it is, or he says what he feels. And a lot of people gravitate to that as well in their characters.
Okay, because, you know, I hope he survives, but don't tell me anything because I want to read it. I want to be surprised.
Lips are sealed.
Okay, all right, that'll be good. So it's Red Winter. Get to your store right now because it just came out this week, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it, especially if you're a criminal fan like I am. You're going to really want to read this book, and yeah, if you're like me, you're going to want to collect it and have it around to read. Every once in a while, I want to pull a trade out and get lost in it, and this is the kind of thing that I just fall right into, and I just really enjoy it. I'm in that world, and you know, that doesn't always happen with the comics, but it does with yours. So, Red Winter.
If you think about it, too, like you were saying about doing another story, theoretically, another story could follow on after this one, but there's also an awful lot of story that we talk about that's taken place before Red Winter starts. So perhaps that might be an angle for me to explore. You know, maybe you could do a story that mixes after the end of issue 4 and then also flashbacks to what happened before. So I feel like I have set up like fertile ground for me to mine. So we'll see.
No, I'd like to see it. That's all I can say. This is one of those stories that is so good. And I can't wait to see the ending. I'm you know, when you get to the end, a really good, satisfying end is a rare thing, and I'm looking forward to it. And I just can't wait to see what you're going to do. It should be great fun.
Can't wait for you to read it.
Can't wait to do it. So, anyhow, it's like, again, it's Red Winter, and it comes from Scout Comics. If all else fails, go to scoutcomics.com, and you can get it from them. And, well, are there other projects? You mentioned you'd written other scripts. Are there other projects you're working on besides Red Winter?
Yes, I actually I have a Kickstarter campaign running at the moment for Transdimensional, which is a sci-fi horror comic I did with a UK publisher called Teapot Comics. So this Kickstarter is to fund the collected edition graphic novel of the 4 issues miniseries. So that's currently running. Transdimensional was the first comic series really that I wrote. It's a sci-fi horror. If you're a fan of something like Alien or Dead Space or The Abyss or Event Horizon, that type of thing, Transdimensional might be up your alley, and the Kickstarter campaign is going well so far, so I'm really looking forward to that being collected, trade, and if the Kickstarter does well enough, we might be doing a hardcover of that as well. Ooh. So that would be amazing. So if you'd be interested in that kind of thing, if you just go to Kickstarter and type Transdimensional, a sci-fi horror graphic novel, you should be able to find it.
Oh, great. See, I got to go look that up now, because I'm fascinated about how these things are going, because, like I said, it's going to be totally different. I mean...
Oh, it's very... It's totally, totally different than Red Winter. And I feel that's good. It's, you know, I want, as a creator, to show that I can do different things.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, stories like Red Winter, I think, are... They're sort of where my heart lies, and that's what I'll do most of, I think, going
mm-hmm.
forward.
Uh-huh.
But I also, I love sci-fi, I love horror, so we'll see how things develop, but yes, these are my first two series.
Cool. Very cool. Well, I think that's really neat that you're doing those kinds of things. And as soon as we get done talking, I'll be taking a look at those. But it's such great stuff because, this is where I think comics really excel these days. As much as I love my DC, and I'm a DC guy too, I read some Marvel, but mostly DC. The truth of it is they're still stuck in that, that everybody has to come back. If to kill somebody, there's like a huge group of people rise up, like Wally West, he gets killed, they rise up and scream bloody murder. But the nice thing is with yours, you can do whatever you want, and that the possibilities to me are always great fun. I don't know where you're going, and it's such a great idea to get in and take the ride and go see where you're heading. So it's really good stuff.
Interesting. I would imagine I haven't written for Marvel and DC, but I would certainly like to someday. but it must be an interesting challenge to do stories like that, where you can have a beginning, a middle, and an end to your story, theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always going to be more stories after it. And you, unless you're one of the sort of the big writers at the big two, you're not going to get to change much of significance, I would imagine. So it would be an interesting challenge to work within that space. Challenge in writing your own thing.
Well, since I ragged on Marvel, let me just say one book of theirs that I really like. It's Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. If you ever get to read it, Tom Taylor, okay. Who did Injustice.
Oh, I read some Tom Taylor stuff. He's really good.
Yeah, it's very good. The one issue I'll talk about, issue number 6, it looks like Spider-Man's getting a sidekick.
Okay.
But what's really going on is interesting. I really liked it. It was something I didn't expect, and it really ended really well. So I bought the book. Tom Taylor's name's on something. I'm usually after it because I love the way he does stuff. And your name, too, now. I'm going to be checking your stuff out.
Oh, wow.
After your things as well. Good stuff.
I can say, like I said, I don't really read Marvel much either, but I have read Donny Cates and Brian Stegman. I've read the first volume of their Venom run. And I really, really enjoyed that. And I'm not even a particularly big Venom fan, but a lot of people say good things about it. So I read that not so long ago. And I've read a bit of Immortal Hulk. And Immortal Hulk was very interesting, so I'll definitely get the further volumes of that. But like you, I'd be more in the DC.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just DC appeals to me the way that they do stuff. That's all I can say. So more than that. But anyway, I'm gonna check out your stuff at Kickstarter, Transdimensional. And what was the other one again?
No, that was it. Yeah, sorry. Transdimensional is the one that's funding on Kickstarter at the moment.
Okay.
But I do have some other projects that are sort of in various stages. I would say they're in sort of holding patterns, with different publishers interested and things like that. So I'm hoping, now that Red Winter's out, maybe some things will be sealed, and then I can talk about some more projects upcoming.
That'd be great. Now, let's talk about social media and stuff like that, how we keep up with your stuff. Do you have any social media places we can go to keep up with what you're doing?
I do, yeah. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Michael... 09-12-13, which is my daughter's birthday. So that's me on Twitter. I also have Facebook. You just go Michael Gordon. And there are Facebook pages for Red Winter and Transdimensional as well. If you just type in Red Winter Comic and Transdimensional Comic. I haven't managed to set up an Instagram account yet. but I hear that that's sort of pretty much that's something I should do. So an Instagram account might be forthcoming, but mostly you'll find me on Twitter.
Okay. I'm a Facebook guy.
But I'm not on there quite as much.
Okay. It just depends.
Yeah.
It just depends. Some people use Twitter more than Facebook. I'm a Facebook guy. I tend to use that more because I find it easier to use. Twitter, you know, they say like a post on Twitter disappears like in a couple minutes. And so I like Facebook. Facebook will give me the stuff I'm interested in, and I can go back and look at it a little more easily. But, hey, whatever works for you is about – I sign up for a lot of stuff. I'm on a lot of social media because I like to promote the podcast. And I also like to follow folks like you so I can keep up with your stuff because it's really good stuff. So, Mike, I'm glad we got to talk, and I'm so glad that we got to do this. And I have Transdimensional up in front of me on my screen. I'll say one thing maybe because we can support that, is the project, it will end on August 15th at 3:42 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, which is probably different because you're in a different time zone.
Yeah.
But you're doing well, is right for that. I won't give it that's total because it'll change as we get through it. But it looks like a really good project. I'm going to have to get into this because it looks really good. But you do some good stuff there, Michael, I have to say. I'm very compelling. I just can't imagine how Transdimensional works because it's so going to be so different from Red Winter. It'll be really interesting. So, but if I know you're writing at all from this, I know there's going to be really compelling characters and interesting situations. So I'm looking forward to it.
I certainly think so. I think there's compelling characters in Transdimensional as well. And even, you know, you can tell looking at the art style is complete 180 from Red Winter. You know, this is the art team on Transdimensional is a Brazilian artist named Andre Pereira. Mm-hmm. And the colorist is Jan Wingard, who is his brother is Casper Wingard, who does art now for Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
But the Transdimensional art, it's much more colorful, but also more horrific. You know, it's kind of a gory comic. It's just it's a completely different feel to Red Winter. So I'll be very interested to hear what you think.
It says on there, it's a graphic novel that will appeal to the fans of Alien, The Abyss, Event Horizon, and Dead Space.
Mm-hmm.
So I like all that stuff. So I'm going to have to get into this. But when we get done, I'll have to sign up and find a backer level that I want to get into. But all looks great. Michael, it all looks great stuff. I have to say, it's so nice to find new good stuff that I didn't know about before. And that's why the podcast exists, is to get the word out on good stuff that I think people should know about. And this is certainly a case. Red Winter, Transdimensional, all these good things that Michael are into. I would definitely follow him on Twitter because that's where he inhabits the most. And, you know, Michael, just keep it up. I hope you've got all these good things that you're considering that they actually come to pass so we can all get to read them. Yes, really good stuff.
I'm hoping everything I want to happen happens. and I'm feeling very good about Red Winter coming out. And thank you very much for having me on the podcast. And it's been so, so nice to hear such positive thoughts. You know, it's invaluable for a creator. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.